Change. Change is always with us. Changing seasons, changing environment, changing world and national conditions. As humans, we often struggle with change and call that struggle stress. Dr. Doug Kennedy is on the faculty at the University of Minnesota, where he researches and teaches mindfulness-based stress reduction and its incorporation into healthcare and educational systems. He joins us now to share his insights on these practices. Welcome, Doug.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's good to be on the air with you again.
Well, can you tell us, you know, as I kind of went snooping around on the internet, looks like you've got a very interesting path that led to your career. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to this career that you find yourself in?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a little sideways. You know, sometimes I tell my students and the educators that we work with is that, you know, my path to the U, at least to this position, was because I was what I would call a recovering, or I was a high-functioning train wreck. And what that meant is that, you know, I was one of these people who was very healthy on the outside. I was a competitive athlete, you know, those types of things. But stress was pretty much consuming me. And it got to the point where, you know, pretty much everything in my life was going to be taken away from me. And mindfulness turned it around. And it was actually a teacher at the U, Eric Storley, who showed me how to practice. And from that point on, you know, that was better than a decade ago. I've seen improvements in my life, and I've just been really privileged to be able to take, you know, this simple set of practices, and then also then be able to do, you know, federally funded research on it, and then also bring it to educators here in Minneapolis and their students.
Wow. So amazing. A personal passion becomes your career.
Yeah. You know, and it's an interesting piece because while I can see the really, you know, the really powerful effect that it had on my life, you know, it did turn things around. But as a scientist, I've got to be both, you know, I can have that passion, but I also have to be deeply skeptical, you know, that you have to be looking at this being, bring a critical mindset to it. So it's a straddling of it. Right. And, you know, this is something that we bring to our kids, to our students in class, to our educators. And, you know, of course, when we go out and do research.
So can you describe for us what is mindfulness?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of definitions out there. And if you were out hunting on the web, you probably saw quite a few. One definition that I like comes from Jon Kabat-Zinn. And the way he, you know, positions it, right, is that it's paying attention in a particular way on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. And, you know, within that simple phrase, there is a lot going on in it. And when we look at, you know, other definitions, they all seem to share kind of three characteristics. There's an intentionality around this. There's attention. And then there's attitude. So, you know, when we do mindfulness, we're actually setting down to do it. It's not like zoning out and watching television, right, or just letting our thoughts go blank. We bring a specific type of attention to it. We're paying attention to what's here, whether it's sensation, you know, things like that. And then we bring an attitude of non-judgment and openness. So that's really, you know, mindfulness. And sometimes, you know, it gets other things, and, you know, we think about it's, you know, it's a set of products or a specific way of sitting, but it's this bringing attention to what's here, non-judgmentally.
And as I understand it, some of these practices were originally derived from some Eastern spiritual practices?
Well, you know, and that's kind of a misconception. So one of the researchers that I had presented with a number of years ago, he's a Rikkarup by heritage. He grew up in the reservation out in Oklahoma, and he says, when I look at mindfulness, he goes, this, you know, this that I talk about, that I research, I go, this is what, you know, this is what my ancestors did. We just didn't call it mindfulness. We called it something else. So when you look across, you know, cultures, you look across history, you're going to find a lot of contemplative practices out there that will share pieces of this. When I talk about the work that I'm doing at the University of Minnesota or the work that I'm going out to do in schools, we are talking about, you know, a secular practice with those intentional attitudinal factors to it.
Right, because there's no particular God that that is a part of this. It's not a belief system, correct?
Exactly. You know, but it's a really important question, because we do have students that will have very, you know, strong faith beliefs that will say, well, I don't know if I can practice this. And that's when we have to have that nuanced discussion around, okay, so let's talk about traditions, let's talk about belief, and let's actually talk about what we're working with here.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with it, can you describe what are some of the mindfulness practices that you include in your work, whether in healthcare or educational systems?
Right, and there are a variety of practices. You know, there's kind of, in some ways, a misconception that it's only sitting. You know, they picture, if you go out onto Google, you know, and you get like 78 million hits in under a second, you know, you see a lot of people sitting on cushions, and it's cross-legged, you know, people in lotus pose, and my body can't do that. You know, I'm just not that flexible.
I'm glad to hear that I'm not alone in that regard.
Perfect. Like, welcome to the, you know, the club, right? But people, you know, they think that that's going to be it. So certainly you can sit. You know, when I tell my students, like, well, you can practice mindfulness in a chair, because our university is just infested with chairs. You know, they're everywhere you look. So you could sit and you can start to pay attention to your breath while seated at your desk. You know, maybe you're at home, maybe you're sitting in the library. You could pay attention to your breath, for example, when you're walking, when you're doing the dishes. Everyone has to do the dishes, right? But it's that process of bringing attention to what is in this moment and being aware of that without getting hung up in the narratives like, this is good, this is bad, you know, this is pleasant or unpleasant, but just noting what's there. And again, that can be through sitting, which is a great foundation to start to practice. You can do it while you're moving. We do that with the folks that are 50 years and older in one of our interventions to try to get people to be more physically active. Or you can bring it to everyday routines, you know, whether that's walking through a doorway, doing the dishes, taking the dog for a walk, and any of those will work.
And you mentioned the name Jon Kabat-Zinn. He, I believe, did a lot to incorporate mindfulness into healthcare systems and healthcare care. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So I'm not his authorized historian. But, when we look at the work that Jon Kabat-Zinn did, I mean, it really deeply influenced the research arc of mindfulness. And he was in a clinical setting, and he was working with people that were not responding to care. So these were people that were chronically ill or were experiencing pain, and he's like, well, what else can we do? And as he worked with these individuals, he saw improvements in their emotional well-being and their resilience and other health conditions too. So, you know, that was back in the 1970s and 1980s. And as research has grown, and now there are over 4,000 studies on mindfulness, I think in the last year there were 700 papers that were published on mindfulness. We're not just examining mindfulness in the clinical space, in the healthcare space, but now we're seeing applications to things like work. So, for example, Google has a mindfulness program that they have for their employees with a really long waiting list. The military is applying it to soldiers to increase their resilience. So we're seeing it in these other applications. The work that we're doing at the U is that, okay, now it's in an implementation side. So how can we use these practices to help people overcome things like obstacles to physical fitness? Or how can they better cope with chronic pain, for example?
And you, in particular, have a special interest now in incorporating this into educational settings. Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So for the we're in our fourth year now. We've been partnered with some of the local public schools here, and it was really my background. Actually, I'm coming to the university as a second career. I was a high school teacher for 15 years, but what we were seeing is that, you know, mindfulness has been found to help, you know, alleviate stress. It improves emotional regulation, resiliency, emotional competency, decreasing emotional reactivity, and people started to think like, well, wow, kids could use this, you know, and there's been some research that's been really interesting talking about social emotional learning, and that maybe mindfulness can be a facilitator for it. So as we were thinking about it, though, we know that teachers are really the single greatest influence on a child's education and achievement. And we see teachers leaving the profession in record numbers. It's like, well, what if we did something for educators, you know, where they would first, you know, regulate themselves so they could show up better for their kids in the classroom. And that's good for kids that have experienced trauma or other difficulties. And then if once they had a good grounding in it and we could help them learn, then they could bring it to their students. It's kind of like building along the idea that you really can't teach what you don't know. And we've used, you know, teachers from on-site, from in the schools, where they're trained. So the program actually, what we've found, or at least it seems to indicate that, you know, we've built a program that will stay even after, you know, the university leaves. And the teachers really seem to like it, and they're seeing, at least they're reporting changes in their classroom, changes in the way that they're viewing their students with much more patience and compassion. When I think about my own kid in the schools, you know, that's really what I want for them.
Cool. So there's good science for this in healthcare. There's good science being developed in educational systems, and probably a lot more opportunities to see how this might be incorporated into other aspects of society, huh?
It seems to be. You know, but you point out something really, really important. You know, that the science is growing at this point. You know, so we can say, well, it seems that we've got some really interesting directions, but we're still investigating. But it seems like there's a real interest there, and you know, it's a great time to be researching this.
Yeah, this is great, and you get paid to do it.
I get paid to do it. I get to have fantastic conversations with people, and as our students in our classes talk about, you know, this is really an important class for them as they become, you know, they're young adults. They're going to be going out into the working world. They're navigating relationships. And we get a lot of good feedback from how it impacts their experience here on the University of Minnesota campus.
For our listeners who are hearing about this now and wondering, where might they find out more about the work that you do or about mindfulness in general?
Yeah, well, that's a really important question because there's a lot of information out there. You know, there are a lot of products out there now, as what was once a cottage industry has now become, you know, pretty big business. You can find everything from, you know, mindful clothing to beverages to, you know, you name it.
Phone apps.
I would say, right, and tons of apps, yeah. So what I would say is that a great place to start would be, you know, look at the university in your backyard. You know, we are the University of Minnesota. And if you go to our website, which is csh.umn.edu, there are a host of resources there, you know, from our staff, from our faculty here, and that's a great beginning. In fact, we have a button on our website that's taking charge of your health and well-being, and that gives a real holistic view of health. There are quizzes on there, lectures, talks, tons of free information. Under our education tab, there's online learning, articles, and recordings. And those are free, and there are also, you know, offerings that people can pay for, coursework that they can pay for. But that's a great place to start, and then you'll know that the information coming from the U is going to be credible. There are also some really good authors out there that our teachers and students have really gravitated towards. And again, these can be, you know, kind of as a starting point. You can even find them on YouTube. Dan Harris, I think, does a really good job of making the message of mindfulness accessible. And if people are really interested in the brain and mindfulness, Dan Siegel out of UCLA is a great place to turn to. If people want to use apps, you know, I would say do your homework and find an app that a lot of people find a tracking function so that it can track their progress, you know, kind of like a Fitbit. But make sure that there are reputable, well-known teachers on it. And the last piece I'll say is that there's a really interesting intersection now in mindfulness and equity, which I think is equity practice in particular, looking at social equity, you know, racial and social equity. And if people, you know, check out Mindful Magazine or Mindfulness for the People too, I think people really have their experience broadened and their thinking challenged, and it's really a spot that I'm finding important and exciting right now too.
Great. We have had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Douglas Kennedy, assistant professor and research fellow at the University of Minnesota, who has a special interest in mindfulness. Dr. Kennedy, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Absolutely. You have a good evening.
You too.
Yeah, bye-bye.